The stage is set. Listen and be heard. Because Pilipinas is now on a bigger platform. Hosted by Cookie Tuazon with Marty Tenko, they will feature spoken word acts, tackle topics that keep the mic alive, and the community of artists inspired.
My name is Cookie.
My name is Marty.
Welcome to Because Pilipinas. We are the show that shows you around the ins and outs of literature as pop culture. We may not discuss by the book like you see in a formal sit-down setting, but we allow everyone the experience to breathe learning by listening. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to read to you different stories on ARV, antiretroviral therapy. This is a continuation of sorts to our episode 46 topic, writing about HIV. Marty.
Yes, Ms. Cookie.
Is there an HIV-positive fictional character who made a mark in contemporary literature?
I'm actually more drawn to the characters who helped the characters with HIV.
Oh, okay.
Just like I mentioned in our previous episode, I love Dr. Emma Bruckner in the movie A Normal Heart for doing everything she can to take care of her patients, fighting for them, and giving them some sense of normalcy. I also love Jill West from the series It's a Sin. She may be a young lady, but she did everything she can by learning all possible information on the disease, being supportive to her friends, especially when there was no one there for them, and visiting patients who had no one else there for them.
Amazing.
Yeah, about you, Cookie?
To me, it's Clarice Precious Jones from Push by Sapphire. Yes. I mentioned her last week also.
Right.
A brief background. In spite of the odds being obese and illiterate, 16-year-old Precious has experienced a lifetime of horrific sexual and physical abuse at the hands of her parents. When Precious's mother reveals that her father, who raped and impregnated her twice, died from AIDS, Precious gets tested for the virus and must come to terms with her own HIV-positive status. She then joins an incest support group and an HIV-positive group where she learns that she is not alone in her struggles. It is truly a tale of the transformative power of hope and friendship.
Indeed.
There's also Richard Brown from The Hours by Michael Cunningham. Clarissa is good friends with a brilliant poet named Richard, a gay man who is dying of AIDS. Parts of the novel explore Richard's life and argumentative yet vibrant personality before AIDS took a toll on his health. Another notable fictional character is Jim Wilson from The Hulk, Marvel Comics. Wilson, a supporting character in the Hulk comic book series, was a troubled and defiant youth who befriended the Hulk, eventually becoming one of the few people the Hulk trusted. In a December 1991 issue, Wilson's HIV-positive status was revealed. In an August 1994 issue, sadly, the virus claimed his life. And there's Mia from The Green Arrow, DC Comics. Mia, the teenage sidekick of Green Arrow, was HIV-positive as a result of her time working as a prostitute on the streets. On Mia's HIV-positive status, creator Judd Winnick explains, "Comics have a long history of telling lessons. They tell stories through metaphor. But sometimes I feel we don't need the metaphor. Why should it be that Mia contracts some alien virus? It's actually a good thing that the Green Arrow comic books will forever be remembered by fans not only as an epic adventure series ridden with bloodthirsty extraterrestrials and determined criminals, but that it also explored issues affecting the everyday lives of millions, one of them being HIV.
That's true. Very relatable.
Yes. Marty.
Yes, Cookie.
On ARV, what story have you found?
There is this article in Vice.com entitled Young, British, and Living with HIV. And they feature the grim reality that truly constant education is necessary or the world as a whole would repeat the same problems that happened in the 80s. Having December 1 as World AIDS Day, complete with fundraising events and all, is not enough. The article featured several men and their experience. a young man named James, age 24, who was 18 when he was diagnosed with HIV, said that he had no idea what HIV was or how it was contracted. He has had 6 years to think about this status, and not a single day goes by without him thinking about it. He wishes he knew more then, to have been better educated, and to have known enough to try and prevent it from happening. Another young man named Luke, who was also diagnosed when he was 18, said that he had never heard anything about HIV in school. He states that one becomes a bit reckless when youngsters come of age, but it's far worse if one has no basis of knowledge to refer to. Luke also said that sex and relationship education in school was virtually non-existent. It seemed that discussions only lasted a few hours. If people weren't there, they didn't receive it. While they stressed the importance of contraception, it was only for pregnancy. Luke also said that he has lost friends after going public about his diagnosis. People stopped answering his calls. He believes it was because they were afraid to be associated with somebody that was openly HIV positive. When he confided in a friend about his status, she was more concerned that she'd shared his wine glass than how Luke was feeling. The article stresses that if you are worried, HIV cannot and will not be spread by sharing glasses. Sadly, despite it now being considered to be a very manageable long-term health condition, HIV is still widely misunderstood. According to Luke, you can sit on a park bench and talk for 2 hours with someone about your diabetes, but you can't do that with HIV because you'll often get a look of fear and shock.
Wow. Thank you for sharing those stories, Marty.
How about you, Cookie?
Actually, I'm going to share another story with you later on.
Okay.
But first, let me ask you, Marty, this question.
Yes, Miss Cookie.
What do we know about ARV? Please tell us more first about its history.
According to the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, scientists funded by National Institutes of Health, or NIH's National Cancer Institute, or NCI, first developed azithromycin, or AZT, in 1964 as a potential cancer therapy. AZT proved ineffective against cancer and was shelved, but in the 1980s, it was included in an NCI screening program to identify drugs to treat HIV/AIDS. In the laboratory, AZT suppressed HIV replication without damaging normal cells, and the British pharmaceutical company Burroughs Wellcome funded a clinical trial to evaluate the drug in people with AIDS. Used alone, AZT decreased deaths and opportunistic infections, albeit with serious adverse effects. In March 1987, AZT became the first drug to gain approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for treating AIDS. AZT, also referred to as zidovudine, belongs to a class of drugs known as nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors, or NRTIs. The AIDS Clinical Trials Group, or ACTG, established in 1987, quickly began work to build on this discovery. Unfortunately, this wasn't a reliable solution. The limitations of single drug treatment regimens quickly became apparent. HIV replicates swiftly and is prone to errors each time it does. These errors or mutations cause small changes in the virus. HIV variants with mutations that confer resistance to an antiretroviral drug can evolve rapidly. In some people taking AZT alone, drug resistance developed in a matter of days. Scientists thus tested whether combining drugs would make it difficult for the virus to become resistant to all the drugs simultaneously. In the early 1990s, data from an NIAID-funded study of AZT in combination with another NRTI drug called didioxytidine, or DDC, or zelcitabine, showed that this two-drug therapy was more effective than AZT alone, raising hopes about the use of combination therapy in treating HIV/AIDS. While the effects of 2-NRTI therapy were better than those of single drug therapy for many people with HIV, they were of limited duration. A major advance came in 1996 when researchers found that triple drug therapy could durably suppress HIV replication to minimal levels, while creating a high genetic barrier against development of drug resistance. The possibility and success of triple drug therapy, also called highly active antiretroviral therapy or HAART, was partially due to the appearance of a new antiretroviral drug class, the protease inhibitors. In December 1995, zaquinavir became the first protease inhibitor to receive FDA approval. In 1996, results from an NIAID-sponsored trial showed that a three-drug regimen of zaquinavir, DDC, and AZT was more effective than two-drug therapy with DDC and AZT.
Cool.
How about you, Cookie?
Okay, trivia time.
Yes.
Did you know that authors John Updike and Salman Rushdie released a collection of short stories from leading authors for the benefit of HIV and AIDS victims in South Africa?
Whoa.
The collection called Telling Tales features 21 short stories by famous authors from around the world. Rushdie says contributing to the book gives authors a chance to speak out against silence and ignorance, elements that foster the spread of AIDS. He said, "We know that in South Africa, there are problems associated with the government's or certainly the president's denial of the link between HIV and AIDS, which means, among other things, that amazingly few people are receiving antiretroviral treatment." And then you find, unfortunately, in many Islamic countries, the idea that if you are a good Muslim, you don't get AIDS. And therefore, AIDS is plague on bad Muslims and unbelievers. These are all very pervasive and dangerous misconceptions that are floating around out there. And I think that as well as hoping people will buy and read and enjoy this book. I think it is important for us to say our piece about those misconceptions and how they can be knocked down.
Yeah. Wow, amazing.
Nobel Prize laureate Nadine Gordimer came up with the project and contributed a story of her own. She says she thought of the idea after seeing lots of musicians raising money for HIV and AIDS research and prevention, but not authors. She said, "But what have we writers done?" And I felt that although I'm sure all of us, many of us have given money and contributed in a private way to whatever organizations are fighting the disease, but as a group, as people, as artists, as people in the arts, what have we done?
Wow.
And the answer was nothing.
That is absolutely painful.
Yeah. That's very gutsy of Gordimer.
That's true.
Anyway, contributing authors include four other Nobel Prize winners. The German novelist Günter Grass.
Ooh.
Japanese-born Kenzaburo Oe.
Wow.
Gabriel Garcia Marquez of Colombia.
Ooh.
And Portuguese author Jose Saramago.
Wow.
Other well-known names include American writer Arthur Miller and Canadian wow. author Margaret Atwood.
Wow, literary star-studded.
The greats. Some of the greats.
That is true.
Marty.
Yeah.
On books for children tackling HIV/AIDS, what titles should be picked up and read?
ReadToConnect.ca gave a list that I think I'd love to read myself.
Okay.
Here are some of the books in their list of books on HIV/AIDS for young children. My Dad Has HIV by Earl Alexander. 7-year-old Lindsay learns to cope with her father living with HIV. She becomes proud of him for his efforts to stay healthy.
Aww.
My Mommy Has AIDS by Linda Arnold. David shares the story of his mother's illness in a straightforward and appropriately childlike manner. He describes what it is like when his mom feels sick, her treatment, and what people can do to avoid becoming HIV infected.
Wow.
Home Now by Leslie Beek. After losing her parents to the African AIDS epidemic, C. Sieta now lives with her auntie in a place she must call home now, but Sieta can't seem to smile until the one day when she meets an orphaned baby elephant at the elephant park and she begins to see things in a different light.
Aww.
Aww. Bye Bye Secrets, a book about children living with HIV or AIDS in their family by Group of Five. Five girls, ranging in age from 8 to 12, tell about their own experience with HIV and AIDS, focusing on secrets and stigmatization around the disease. They want all children with HIV and AIDS in the family to know that they are not alone. The book is illustrated by children.
Wow.
Right? Come Sit By Me by Margaret Merrifield. The book tells about discrimination faced by children living with HIV/AIDS. Karen's friend Nicholas has AIDS. When Karen's parents find out that Nicholas is being left out by the other children, they help organize a meeting to address fears of both caregivers and children. Nosipo Comes to Stay by Sarah Ustuizen. When both of Tandi's parents die of AIDS, she goes to live with her gogo. There, memories of Tandi's family are woven into a special doll named Nosipo that is made from the possessions of her parents, her mother's dress and beads, and her father's jersey, which still holds the sweet smell of his pipe. Through Nosipo, Tandi is able to find comfort and hope.
Sounds heartwarming.
Yeah, right? Whisper, Whisper, Jesse, Whisper, Josh, a story about AIDS by Aileen Pollock. When Jesse learns that his uncle Josh has AIDS, he takes part in the family's commitment to provide loving care during a difficult illness. This is a valuable book for helping children bear the hurt of losing a loved one and for providing information on AIDS that can dispel their fears. My Grandma Has AIDS, Anisha's story by Valerie Reeder Bay and Anisha Wilburn. The story is written by 8-year-old Anisha, who lives with her HIV-positive grandmother. The book seeks to help young children understand that it is safe to live with, kiss, and hug someone you love who is infected with HIV.
Wow, she's only 8.
Right? You Can Call Me Willie, a story for children about AIDS by Joan C. Verniero. Wilhelmina Willie Jones is 8 years old. She loves baseball, lives with her grandmother, and has AIDS. In this story, Willie talks about her illness and exhibits exceptional strength and courage as she learns to cope with its symptoms and the side effects of treatment, to put up with classroom taunts, and to find fun and friendship. Brenda Has a Dragon in Her Blood by Hiltje Vink. 3-year-old Brenda is an ordinary little girl who likes to fly a kite and look at the clouds, but people are sometimes frightened by the dragon, HIV, in her blood. This is a true story about Brenda, a 3-year-old ordinary girl living with HIV, written by her foster mother. Those are just some of the books.
I like your list.
I'm excited to know yours, Cookie.
Okay, Out released a list of literary canon on reading AIDS and HIV.
Ooh.
I'm not going to go through the synopsis, but I'm just going to read to you the titles.
Yep, game on. I'm ready.
And the authors.
I have my pen and paper ready.
Number 1, Facing It, a novel of AIDS by Paul Reed. 2, The Darker Proof by Adam Mars Jones and Edmund White. 3, Mortal Embrace, Living with AIDS by Emmanuel Julie. 4, Borrowed Time, an AIDS memoir by Paul Monnet. 5, Ground Zero by Andrew Holleran. 6, The Irreversible Decline of Eddie Socket by John Wire. 7, The Art Lover by Carol Masso. 8, People in Trouble by Sarah Schulman. 9, The Body and Its Dangers and Other Stories by Alan Barnett. 10, To the Friend Who Did Not Save My Life by Hervé Gilbert. 11, Unending Dialogue, Voices from an AIDS Poetry Workshop by Rachel Haddis. 12, The Man with Night Sweats by Thom Gunn. 13, Angels in America, Millennium Approaches and Angels in America, Perestroika by Tony Kushner, now in one volume.
Wow.
14, My Alexandria by Mark Doty. 15, One Boy at War, My Life in the AIDS Underground by Paul A. Serios. 16. Martin and John by Dale Peck. 17. A Small Gathering of Bones by Patricia Powell. 18. The Gifts of the Body by Rebecca Brown. 19. Hospital Time by Amy Hoffman. 20. An Arrow's Flight by Mark Mullis. 21. The Line of Beauty by Alan Hollinghurst. 22. Ghost Dance by Douglas Wright. 23. Smash Cut, A Memoir of Howard and Art and the 70s and the 80s by Brad Gooch. 24. The Angel of History by Rabih Alameddine. 25. Last but not least, How to Survive a Plague, The Story of How Activists and Scientists Tamed AIDS by David France.
Wow, what a list.
What a list.
Can't wait to get my hands on them.
Yeah, you should all check it out. Now let me read to you a moving story I found online on ARV. Here's the story of Alina, an HIV-positive girl who was the first to start antiretroviral therapy in Uzbekistan.
Whoa.
She was diagnosed with HIV when she was born. She got it from her mother, who left her in the maternity hospital when the diagnosis was confirmed. When Alina turned 6, she tried the first medicines which prevented the virus spread. The doctor told her that she is the first HIV-positive child who has a chance for a normal future, since that was a time when antiviral therapy entered Uzbekistan. Soon at 13, she found out that everyone in the orphanage knew about her status. Surprisingly, she was not treated differently there, since the orphanage already had experience with children like her. They had about 11 HIV-positive children living there at the time. But then she was moved to another orphanage, and it was different there. She was not treated well. Boys were discriminating and bullying her. They were telling others not to be close to her. During her lifetime in an orphanage, she has never been adopted, since healthy families did not want to take children living with HIV. Now, since there is a new law on the reduction of children in child care institutions, orphanages started placing children with HIV in healthy families as well.
Wow.
Alina is the first child diagnosed with HIV in Uzbekistan. She is also the first child abandoned for her HIV status and the first child to receive antiretroviral therapy in Uzbekistan in 2006. Alina is an example of a powerful girl who has been trying to receive equal treatment from peers, teachers, and even employers without giving up. She is now making efforts to help other children with HIV status living in institutions. She visits them, talks, and gives them the motivation to live. She initiates training of childcare specialists on HIV/AIDS to transform their mindset and break the stigma.
Wow, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's amazing. Alina is remarkable.
Yeah.
We would like to thank PAFPI, Positive Action Foundation Philippines Incorporated, for their support.
Thank you so much, PAFPI.
Thank you, PAFPI.
Positive Action Foundation Philippines Incorporated, or PAFPI, was formed in 1998 by Joshua Formentera, who is the founding president, with the help of other persons living with HIV Philippines and AIDS, or PLWHAs, and their uninfected families. This nonprofit organization has a mission to empower people with HIV/AIDS and their families to live a normal, happy, and productive life in the mainstream of a supportive society. The said organization also is continuing the fight for HIV Philippines and AIDS prevention and control by facilitating support responses to the needs of PLWHAs and their families. This is done through the provision of appropriate care and support services. PAFPI believes in the greater involvement of positive people in the national response to HIV Philippines and AIDS, a belief that actively pursues both the organization and advocacy programs. PAFPI has been fighting for health right is human right. Their programs include HIV prevention and education, training and certification of healthcare workers, both in public and private institutions. PAFPI's partnerships with public and private institutions, as mandated by Philippine law, ensure that OFWs have to undergo HIV education. PAFPI has been instrumental in ensuring free antiretroviral treatment for HIV for all Filipinos. The free ARV treatment means that many more people can survive than ever before. Their efforts have, however, not ended with this success. Unfortunately, these people are often met with rejection by friends and family. Many are kicked out of their homes and find themselves alone in the streets. For more than 15 years, PAFPI has provided temporary shelters for thousands of vulnerable people living with HIV and their families. PAFPI's Abot Kamay Drop-In Center, or AK, and Bahay Kanlungan, or BK, literally home care, provide a halfway home for these persons during a very difficult time in their lives. Through a drop-in center, PAFPI will contribute to a vision of a world where people living with HIV live healthy lives free from prejudice and discrimination. Those who have benefited from this project include families with children, deported and returning overseas Filipino workers, as well as those people from the provinces who need to access ARV treatment and medical checkup in the cities. These centers also serve as venues for PAFPI-sponsored trainings, seminars, and one-on-one counseling and HIV and treatment information. The demands for these services are booming due to the increasing infection rate. PAFPI is working hard to ensure that their shelters will be sustainable on a long-term basis.
Visit their website www.pafpi.org. You may also look for them on Facebook. There is comfort in knowing that books can inspire and ultimately save lives.
Amen.
I'm Cookie.
I'm Marty.
Thank you for listening to Because Filipinas.